Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler. I'm here with my co-host, Judy Davis, doing what we love most, which is chatting with each other and experts and getting as much information and as many ideas as possible that can help us to parent in the 21st century. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate that you guys share these shows. We see you on social media sharing them and pinning them, especially through Pinterest. You guys are pin happy and we appreciate that. We love that. We also appreciate the people who have been doing donations to help keep us commercial free so we can stay focused on the experts and the info for you instead of worrying about handling the advertisers and sponsors and stuff. So thank you so much for that. Today we are talking about shoulds and the impact that they have on our lives. Our guest is someone who I met through work. Oh my goodness. Her name's Lisa Drusy, but Lisa, it's probably been, I think about 9 years ago. We were introduced because I was at that time hosting a radio show, and she's a communications expert. And so we started out with interviewing and we really enjoyed working together. Now we've become friends who meet for virtual coffee regularly. Well, during our last morning chat, and Lisa, I don't even know if you know about this, but we were just chit-chatting and I told Lisa about something and she commented about shoulds, and that really struck a chord with me at the time. But over the next week or so, I started seeing all these different places in my life where shoulds had an impact. And it was shocking to me to see how many times a should was affecting me. It was shaping decisions I made. It was impacting my expectations of others. And sometimes it just made me feel bad.
Oh my gosh, Sandy. I can't even begin to tell you how many times I have done the same thing. I mean, shoulda, woulda, coulda could be like blazoned across my forehead. It's just crazy. You know that I have spent years trying to be okay with setting boundaries because that's something I have not been really great at for most of my life. And what happened before I had this aha moment of, or clarity around the whole shoulda, woulda, coulda thing, is that I realized that in order to set boundaries, it would make my life so much better. And I know that I am not the only one that spends way too much time going, I shoulda. It's true. I just am so excited because we're going to be sharing Lisa's message. And this is one of the key things that she talks about. But I'm even more excited about something else. Can I spill the beans?
All right. I can never stop you anyway, so I don't know why you ask.
I know. So I know that you and Lisa worked together a few years ago creating this product. It was called Your Four Keys that was so valuable about communication in general. And I can't wait to tell everybody that we are going to be partnering with Lisa again to do not only a webinar, but our own Mighty Parenting version of that communication product. So it's like, today we get a sneak peek of all of her goodness that's going to be exploded because her message is so valuable. So I'm really excited.
Okay, you spilled all the beans. All right, so let's get started with the interview today by introducing Lisa. As we said, our guest is Lisa Drusy. Lisa is a peak performance coach, a best-selling author, an accomplished speaker, an award-winning trainer with more than 25 years experience in helping people to be the best they can be. Her book, 42 Rules for Creating We, reached number one on Amazon in leadership, management, motivation, and organizational behavior, and it was an overall bestseller. The last book she wrote, which teaches managers to use communication effectively, was called Fast Moving and Insightful by Brian Tracy, which some of you may have heard of, probably most of you have heard of. He's a New York Times bestselling author himself. While Lisa has worked with numerous companies and she currently coaches people who want to create audacious futures, her beginnings were actually really deeply steeped in working with families. One of the things she did is she worked in social services, helping families improve their communication and helping parents with their parenting. So she's caring, she's insightful, and I can't wait for you to hear her wisdom. Lisa, thank you. I'm so glad we're working together again, and thanks for taking the time to join the Mighty Parenting community.
My God, thank you. This is, I'm already having such a good time just listening to this review. I'm thrilled to be here. You know, for me, when people talk about communication, they tend to have a narrow view about it. And I really enjoy sharing a much more expansive and powerful way to think about communication that enlivens people and just allows people to have so much more freedom and so much deeper connections, whether it's with their children, with their significant other, with other family. I mean, anyone that you come in contact with, you can really deepen your connection to them when you have a more expansive understanding, I think, a more expansive understanding of communication.
Well, I know our work has had such an impact on my life, more so personally than professionally, but both, because I took those concepts and really worked with them. And Lisa, you know, you heard me talking about this. I don't know if you even realized the impact. It was just our monthly coffee chat. I don't know if you realized that even had the impact on me, because I didn't see anything right there. There wasn't some big aha moment when we were talking. It was like this slow unraveling and insights over the course of the next week or two. But it was so, so powerful. So I just want to go back to the beginning. And what happened is during our talk, or your chit chat, I don't know if you remembered, you just made the comment after I told you about something happened. You're like, people need to stop shooting all over themselves.
That's the best.
And so I really want to go there and start off and go, okay, yes, it's very funny. But like, you know, where did you come up with that phrase? What caused you to come up with that phrase? What does that mean?
Well, I'm not 100% sure I came up with it. I mean, I may have stolen it, I'm not sure. But, you know, where it came from was just the realization through working with my own coach and coaching others is the degree to which we live in this world of shoulds. Like, we should do this, we should do that, I should do this, I should exercise, I should eat better, I should, you know, whatever, I should be better listener, I should be more understanding. I don't know, there's a million of them. And the thing about it is, it's not something that leaves you in a place of power. I mean, even the word, when you say should, the energy that's around it is very dispiriting. You know, it lowers your energy to think about it. And, you know, I just found that we have this swirling world in our heads of all these shoulds, and we didn't even make them up. You know, we inherited them. We, you know, heard it on TV, or we, you know, heard it through our parents or our teachers or whoever. I would say 99% of the time, and I'm totally making that number up, but I'm only saying from my own experience and the experience of my hundreds of clients I've worked with over the years, we don't stop and examine them. We don't stop and say, well, should I? Is that true that I should exercise more? Is that true? Like, really slow down. Is that something I could do? Is that something I want to do? Is it, you know, what does that even mean? Right? More than who? More than what? You know, it's like these sentences we say and we take them for granted. We just think them. And then, you know, it's the shoulding on yourself is having that experience of being buried in all these things you should be doing with no acknowledgement of all the things you are doing, right? No appreciation for what you're already creating in the world and what you've already, all the contributions and difference you've made. You're buried under this pile of, you know, stories and thinking that just suck the life out of you, frankly.
Yeah. Lisa, where do you think that comes from? Why do we focus on the idea of what we haven't done as opposed, or what we should have done as opposed to what we did?
Well, I think there's, you know, different opinions about that. But, you know, one thing I know from my experience and my own, what's the word I want? Not research, but, you know, my own delving into the topic from reading other people's research and other things is that our brains have a tendency towards the negative naturally. It's an evolutionary reality. And, you know, if you think about it, it makes sense. I mean, back in the day when we were in, you know, hunter gatherers, and, you know, if you saw a bush rattle, and if you had a slightly negative tint called, oh, that might be a tiger, or that might be an animal going to kill me, you ran away, then, you know, your genes ended up in the gene pool. And those people who were much more like, oh, wonder what's rustling in the bushes, they got eaten. So, you know, their genes didn't quite make it. So there's an evolutionary aspect to it that we have a slight tendency towards negativity, but that's not the only reason. It seems to me, and what comes to mind when you ask me that question is that we often mistake our thinking for reality. In other words, if I have a thought, Joe's mad at me, that suddenly takes on a life of its own, and it becomes the filter now that I look at Joe through, and I'm looking for evidence that he's mad or isn't mad, right? So I think in the same way, when we have a thought, I should do this or that, it's somehow letting us off the hook, because it's almost like we think, well, I know I should do it and I'm not doing it, but it's almost as good as doing it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I know that I shouldn't be eating this food, so that makes it okay. And okay. I
was a little lost. I was like, I wasn't sure how that helped. So it's like, as long as we recognize that the behavior is quote unquote wrong or whatever, that's all right.
Well, I think that's how we justify it. And again, I don't have like scientific evidence for that. I'm just telling you in my own experience with my own self and with others is that somehow thinking that I know better or I know is almost as good as doing it. Do you know what I mean? It's like I think it's a way that we let ourselves, I don't want to say let ourselves off the hook, because I don't think we should be on the hook, but it's somehow a way of, I don't even know how to say it. It just feels to me like it's a way that we substitute that thinking for what we actually want to do.
What is it? Would it be something like to deflecting so that we can manipulate our thoughts to get to where we want to go? Is that kind of what you're, or what we believe should be the reality?
Well, I don't know about that. I think, I mean, let's back up. I mean, if we think about how most people are raised, right? If your parent or parents think you're doing something wrong, right? They correct you somehow. And a lot of times that was a negative correction, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I negatively correct you so that you don't do that again. And I think shoulds are a way that we try to negatively correct ourselves. And somehow that then, I don't know, it seems to me like it somehow justifies not doing the exercising or not doing whatever. Because listen, as long as something is a should, most likely you're not doing it.
Right.
It's not like you have a should and then you go do it. It's not that way. If I have a should, I'm not likely going to do it.
Or if we do it, we do it with a very bad attitude.
Yeah. Right, because that's not something we want to do. Mm-hmm. It's what we should be doing. So it's that flip side. Ah, there's an aha moment.
Okay. Yeah, like shoulds exist in the negative universe. They don't exist in a positive. I just had the same moment you did, Judy. It's like, if I am in a positive place, or I want to do it, or I really know this is what I'm going to do, that's not the word that comes out.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So how does this, you know, okay, so shoulds are here. Okay, fine. So how can that harm us? How is that bad for us?
How much time do we have?
Okay, how about the number one way it harms us? Let's do that.
Well, it's, you know, there are myriad ways, but I would say the one most important is that it diminishes us every time we believe it. So I diminish myself to myself. If I go, oh, I should exercise more, you know, the next part of that sentence is, but, you know, something's wrong with me and that's not why I'm doing it. Or if I was a better person, like there's an unsaid that follows the should, right? Like I should eat better. But then there's another thought that may not be as loud or as, you know, as easy to hear, but there's an unsaid. And so we become powerless in that moment because it's really, listen, we have a choice every moment of every day, what we put our attention on and what we do and what we don't do. And, you know, people can argue that point with me, but we always have that choice of what we do and what we don't do. I'm not saying we don't sometimes feel like we have to do stuff, but we always have a choice about what we do and don't do in any given moment. So when I say I should do X or I should do Y, that's indicating to me that I don't know how to use my time wisely or there's something wrong with me. And that's what I mean by diminishing myself.
Mm-hmm. It's as if the I should support the limiting beliefs we have about ourselves.
Yeah. And it all looks so real. Mm-hmm. And our thinking is not the same as reality. And that if there's one message I want to get out is that to people. Is our thinking and reality are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're just not. If I think about a glass, I'm looking at a glass of water on my desk right now, and I think about that glass, that's not the same as the glass of water. They're two different things. But that's not how we relate to our thinking. And when we relate to our thinking about shoulds in particular, we act as if it's real. And so that then shapes and influences. I think you said this, Sandy, at the top of the conversation. It shapes and influences everything you think and do with that. Now you have, you know, you have a whole world that you just created in that I should do X. And you just created a whole world. And that world is not expansive and positive and happy-go-lucky. You know, <What? laughs> it's limiting and it's harsh and it's, you know, it's diminishing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's who we are as human beings.
And how does that hurt our relationships with others?
Well, if I'm walking around with a list of shoulds, 9 times out of 10, or maybe 10 times out of 10, I got a list for you too.
Buy one, get one free.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who doesn't have a list of shoulds about their significant other? I want to meet that person. You know, I mean, I've been doing this work for 25, 30 years, and it's way smaller than it used to be, but every once in a while it pops up in my relationship with my husband about what I think he should do or how he should handle something or how he should, you know, treat me or gifts he should buy me. I mean, you know, it's just becomes a wand that we, you know, because we don't just should on ourselves, we should on others. Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult because the other person feels like they can't win.
Mm-hmm. Because yeah, that was one of my ahas that week was I was thinking about Tom and I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember very clearly going, oh my gosh, I'm thinking he should handle this way or that way. And then I started noticing more things. Like I don't remember what the initial thought was because there was this whole string of them. Mm-hmm. And there were these expectations. And I know he and I just got over that hurdle. We, our daughter graduated from college and the way she is moving into this next phase of her life was not matching the way we would do it. And both of us were going a little bit nuts. And I kind of worked through this process. And then he and I had a couple of conversations about, you know, okay, let's look at, like you said, Lisa, let's look at the reality. No, she is not up at 8 or even 9 in the morning. But when she has to be at work, is she there? If someone's picking her up to do something, you know, if her grandmother needs her to help with something, does she do it? Is she following through? We kind of went through that. Is, you know, is she being responsible? Is she being considerate? Is she being a good person? And we were able to let go of these shoulds about, well, but she should be up at this time of the morning. And this is when she should do job hunting. And this is when she should be doing the chores we gave her. And once we let that go, it was so freeing.
Yeah, because if you didn't see that, then that's going to come across in every interaction that you have with her.
Yeah, it did.
It's going to come across as an angry tone, a dish slammed here or there, or a, you know, slammed cabinet, or she asks you a question and you snap at her and it's a simple question. That's how it communicates. It may not come out in your words, but it comes out in all these other ways. And then suddenly your relationship with your daughter starts to spiral and she doesn't know what's going on. And I can't win with my mother. I can't win with my father. I shouldn't have moved home. And she starts to list her shoulds. And then it becomes this swirl of miscommunication.
So the shoulds are not just our personal kind of limiting beliefs on ourselves, but they actually impact, what I'm hearing you say, Lisa, is they impact every single aspect of our relationships with other people. That leads me to the question of, if we identify that not only are we shoulding all over ourselves, but shoulding all over everybody in our lives, what can we do to turn that tide or put a stick in the spoke?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd like to give you an analogy and see if this helps. So if you start to see your thoughts as energy that's passing through your brain as opposed to reality. Now, I'm not saying, you know, that is easy or, you know, doesn't take practice. But when you begin to see that, you know, thoughts are not things, right? Thoughts are energy that are just passing through your brain. And unless we, you know, gets caught up in them, they just pass through. I mean, everybody's had this experience of being really upset about something and then getting distracted by something else and spending time on that. And then when you're done being distracted, you go, what was I so upset about? Oh, that thing, right? You can bring it back, but it doesn't stick around unless we make it stick around, right? So the analogy I like to use is of a pinball machine. You remember the old-fashioned pinball machines?
Mm-hmm. Love them.
If you think of a pinball machine, you pull the hammer back or whatever, that lever back, and it pops the ball into the pinball machine, and it left to its own devices, it'll hit a couple of the bumpers, it'll light up a couple of things. But if you don't do anything, it just goes down that hole and goes bloop, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of that as a thought, that ball is like a thought, and it goes into the brain, and it'll hit a couple of bumpers, so to speak, or it'll, you know, a couple of neural pathways will get hit. But if you don't do anything with it, it will blow through your brain like clouds on a windy day. It'll shift and change. But what we do is we hit those paddles on the side, and we do everything we can to keep that ball in play or to keep that thought in play. And so we're pushing against those paddles and we're like, and another thing and another thing. And, you know, and then this happened. And then all of a sudden we're in this swirl of ding, 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 whatever, blah, 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 you know, all that going on. When all it takes is to let go of those paddles, to let those buttons go, and to just notice what happens when you see your thinking as just that, as just thoughts passing through. You don't have to fix them. You don't have to try to make yourself feel better. You don't have to try to think positively. You don't have to try to alter your thinking and come up with a new way. No. The way that the brain works is that energy, those thoughts will just pass through, and they will not do any damage if you can start to see them for what they are. And that does take a willingness to see the damage of that shoulds can do. And then, you know, ask yourself, am I am I interested in that? Is that really what I want my relationship with my husband or wife or daughter or son or sister or mother? Is that really what I want my relationship with them to be about? Do I want it to be about my shoulds, or do I want it to be about the love and the connection?
So Lisa, I'd like to hear a little bit more and concretely as much as we can, because I love this idea of going, just let it pass through. But and I especially love that you're like, no, this isn't about fixing the thought, thinking positively. It's not, oh, I have to do these things. It's not maybe it's a natural state. It's not an easy state, especially in today's culture, to just do nothing, to let something go. So, you know, when you're working with clients as they're going through this process, do you have any other tips or strategies on how to just let those thoughts go?
The thing is that tips and strategies tend to just make us think more. And I completely understand the desire to want them. But here's how it works. If you are driving to work and you take a 40-minute drive every day is your commute, and then suddenly somebody says, hey, you know, there's this shortcut over here. You just got to turn right at this light, and that'll cut off 15 minutes of your commute. Once you do it, you don't have to be reminded about that. You don't have to have tips and strategies. You know, you actually go, okay, this is way easier. You know, I just knocked, you know, 15 minutes off my commute. It's the same kind of thing. And I know, you know, this is a brief conversation about it, but when you understand how something works, and you don't, you know, stick your hand in the machine and muck up the works, it just works. So it really is about being willing to see, like you were willing to see in the world of shoulds, like you are just willing to see, like, oh my goodness, this shoulding is damaging. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to not do that. And it's not like you had to think of tips.
True. It was the realization was the thing I needed to allow me to let go.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like the aha, the insight is enough. You know, when someone learns how to ride a bicycle, for example, you know, it looks impossible. It looks impossible. Like, how am I going to get on that two-wheeled thing and not fall and hurt myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these things to think about and all that kind of stuff. And none of that can help you. You know, I could tell you till I'm blue in the face how to ride that bike. It will not make a difference. What makes a difference is getting on the bike and experiencing riding it. And in the moment you get the experience of balance, like, it's an insight. That's actually a discovery. Like, you discover balance in that moment. And then suddenly you have it. Now, it still takes some practice to, you know, steer the thing and know how to brake and all that kind of stuff. But the insight of balance, the discovery of balance, is yours forever. You can't lose it.
And that's like, just what it felt like. Like I said, I was talking about, you know, with my husband and with my daughter, it was like you said, is that discovery moment of, oh, this is balance. And this is actually so easy. Mm-hmm. And riding that bike felt so good. It was the same thing. It was like, oh, these are shoulds. Like, I don't have to do anything about this. They can do whatever they want. It's got nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just let this go. And it just felt so good.
Yeah. It's like that. And I know it sounds too simple and too good to be true, but it works. And the thing is that when you realize that your thoughts are not reality, and then the next thing you start to realize is, okay, if I'm not my thinking, who am I? Mm-hmm. Right? If I'm not my thoughts, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And what that allows you to do is actually start to see that you're not the shoulds. You're not the list of standards that you're trying to hold yourself and other people to. That's not who you are. Those are just thoughts, and they're not even your thoughts. They're not my thoughts. They're inherited thoughts. And they're certainly not original. Right? So then that gives you the space to it's almost like when you're watching TV and the, you know, you're watching a news station and there's all the what do they call that at the bottom, you know, the ticker tape at the bottom, just like blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. You start to see that, oh, these are just these things. Yeah. Try that again. These thoughts are like that. They're just commentary on the bottom of on the screen. That's not who I am. That's not who I have to, I don't have to live consistent with thoughts that aren't even mine. Mm-hmm. Thoughts that I haven't examined to determine, is that really how I want to be in the world? Is that really who I want to be as a parent or as a friend or as a daughter?
And Lisa, it seems to me that looking at ourselves in this way and letting go of the shoulds really do open up an opportunity for us to communicate on a different level, creating a deeper connection.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Judy.
And what is that? What does it mean to connect or communicate on a deeper connection? Because I kind of want to know why it's all worth it. Sounds like a weird thing, but that's what's going through my head. It's like, what can the outcome be if I let go of the shoulds, if I communicate on a different level? How does that help me parent better? How does that help me be in my relationships and have more joy for everyone involved?
Well, if you think about a time when you felt like you were in flow, or you were having a communication with someone and it felt like you could almost complete each other's sentences because you were that in tune with each other and you listened without a lot on your mind and you were able to have compassion for the other person and as well as yourself. Like, you think about what that experience is like, you know, when you're not rushed, when you're not trying to manipulate the other person to see things your way or figuring out a way to coerce gently, you know, your significant other or your child to do something you want them to do, but you're just clear-minded and at peace and allowing the conversation to emerge. There just isn't anything better in my experience. Mm-hmm. Because that's where you touch my coach calls a soul to soul connection. You know, it's that space beyond the superficial, you know, it's what we all crave. I mean, who doesn't want that with their kid, you know, to have that kind of a connection?
It is. I mean, it's what we're all wishing for or aiming for. And, you know, in our Mighty Parenting community, over and over and over, we hear, yeah, I want more tools for communicating with my child, or I want to connect more with my child, or I want to end the battles and the struggles. And I can totally see where going back to even just the should.
Yeah.
Just letting go of that. And we had this battle going on around my daughter's behaviors that were not a problem except in the world of shoulds. Mm-hmm. So that ended that whole battle. It just disappeared in the moment, in, you know, within 24 hours of when we went, okay, not an issue. I mean, we talked to her, we told her, said, we realized that we've been setting up these expectations around things that have nothing to do with you. You're doing a great job. You're taking care of yourself. You're being a kind, responsible, caring, compassionate human being. We're sorry we did this to you. Mm. And just let it all go. And then she knew we were letting it go, so she tentatively let it go, waiting to see if it was going to come back and bite her in the butt. But when it was really gone, the whole battle was just gone.
Yeah.
And so going to this place, this little nirvana that you just described, is like, oh, yeah. But let me do shoulds first. One's baby steps. One thing at a time.
That's the thing, is that shoulds occur as almost like a filter between you and someone else. And if you're, or another way of thinking about it is like, if you're wearing should goggles, right, you can only see the world through what's not working, right? You can't even see what is. And in just from my perspective, hearing what you shared, Sandy, it's like when you let go of the shoulds, it's akin to letting go of those those paddles in a pinball machine. And then the solution came to you. That's where you touch the space of creativity. And now it's like, well, what's really going on here? And it just opened up a whole nother, not only level of being able to connect with your daughter, but connecting with yourself. And that's like, you know, those moments when you're in the shower and you have an aha moment, like, Eureka, all I need to do is this. And, you know, it's like you took your attention off the problem long enough to do something else. And then suddenly you have the answer. Well, you can access that all the time when you recognize your thoughts are not things. And you recognize that your shoulds are not real. They just look that way. Or I should say they're not reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to stop with this because I want us to all have the time to take this one thing and just, I was going to say play with it or experience it, but actually experience letting it go and see how that goes for us. But I want to just go back, and I actually don't want to do a lot of summary of this because I think there's just really a few key things that you've told us here, Lisa, and that is, you know, we're shoulding all over ourselves and others, and that interferes with the way we see and treat ourselves, the way we see and treat other people, and that harms us. It diminishes us. It diminishes other people and our relationship with them. And letting go of the shoulding is truly just a letting go. It's not about doing more, changing our thoughts, fixing things, being a positive thinker, anything. It's just, you use the example of the pinball machine, it's taking your hands off the flippers and just letting that ball roll on through. And so that's just something we can all take and practice this week. But for anyone who's listening, Lisa, and wants to learn more from you, could you please tell us where they can find you?
Yeah, my website is lisagiruzzi.com. G-I-R-U-Z-Z-I is how you spell my last name. You can email me through that website. That's probably the easiest because my email is long. It's lisa@transformationalconversations.com. It's a lot of words. But you can also just go to the contact page on my website and reach me there.
And of course, that'll be in the show notes as well, the link to Lisa's website. So,
yeah, and my phone number is also there. And, you know, I'm still a phone person. So you're welcome to, you know, give me a call. And if there's a way that I can be of service, I will do my best to do that.
I love that our communication expert is still open to getting phone calls. That is fantastic. Everything in me just panicked, Lisa. For myself, oh my goodness. But I just appreciate everything you said. There's so many things about the little nuggets of wisdom that can really just be applied and be so simple, but not easy to do in that letting go. And it's that what you gave us today was such a perfect foundation for building that communication with all the people that we really care about. And I am so excited I know Sandy is too, to be working with you to create something exceptional for our community that they can take all those pieces. And I know this is just the top layer of it, and you can help us so much. So if you're listening today, hop on over to mightyparenting.com and under the resource tab, you can find out about the webinar that we have created to help you understand how to communicate best with your teen. And if it is your first time listening here at Mighty Parenting, we want to welcome you and invite you also to go to mightyparenting.com, where you will find information about all different kinds of things, including our How to Talk to Your Teen free email series and so much more. If you're a longtime listener, thanks for coming back and being with us again this week. And don't forget that you are a mighty parent in everything that you do. And Sandy and I are excited to see you back next week.